Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Expert Channel, where host Phyllis Smith talks with experts from around the world, bringing you the latest news, trends, knowledge, and ideas that you can put to use in your professional and personal life. This show covers a large number of diverse topics focused on business, health, lifestyle, entertainment, technology, and more. Please welcome to the start of the show, your host, Phyllis Smith.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Expert Channel. So glad you could join us today. We have some amazing experts every week. And this week, I am pleased to introduce our guest expert. Well, actually, he is a Pennsylvania State Representative representing the 142nd District in Lower Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And his name is Frank Farry. And with the midterm elections coming up the first week in November, and the political unrest surrounding many communities around the country, the discussion with Frank will be about political issues that face every constituent, and there's so many of them. I mean, it's just insane. So without further ado, I'd like to say hello. Frank, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and obviously for your listeners to listen in.
Well, I understand you were fighting a fire this morning.
It's a busy time. I've been a volunteer fireman for 29 years now and the fire chief of the Langhorne community for 18. So there was a report of a fire at a local school. Thankfully, it did not turn out to be anything serious, which is obviously the important part. So, it's been busy few weeks. Started Sunday morning with a house fire. Thankfully, nobody got hurt there, which is the important part. It's between trying to do a legislative job campaign and then, you know, a busy fire season, can certainly have your schedule going sideways. But appreciate that there was nothing major and I'm able to talk to you.
I'm glad you could join us. And, you know, there's so many things going on out there in the political front. And I wanted to touch on a couple of topics. I know we only have a 30-minute show. So basically, we just want to go for a few things maybe you can enlighten our audience about. You know, one of the big thing was the Me Too movement, you know, the opioid crisis. I want to talk about education for our children because that's a big thing in your community as well. The economy, jobs, I can keep going. But the really important thing here is that you have a strong community interest. How long have you been in the State House of Pennsylvania?
I got elected in 2008, so I'm just rounding out my 10th year as a representative.
Yeah, and it's been a big change and a big turn because of the economy. I mean, the economy in Pennsylvania was hurting for some time, wasn't it?
Because, you know, obviously a lot of the states, unless they have something specific, go on kind of follow the lead of the nation. And, thankfully we've been able to turn that around and the unemployment rate is the lowest now since I've been in office. We've been able to, something that's important to the economy is obviously taxation. So we've been able to do some important things with the state budget, such as, increased funding to education and things of that nature, while not having any broad-based tax increases to the sales tax or the personal income tax. It's interesting. Something that I got to be involved in people think of us as legislators that, okay, you're out in Harrisburg, you're writing legislation, you're voting on bills, you know, back home, you and your staff are working on constituent matters, you know, so somebody has a problem with their driver's license, whatever it may be, unemployment claim, you know, we have staff working on that. But a lot of times we get involved in bigger issues and Crown Cork and Seal, Crown Holdings, a Fortune 500 company, that was based in Northeast Philadelphia, was actually on the verge of moving out of state, either to New Jersey or Florida. And myself and Senator Tommy Tomlinson, who's the state senator in my district, and some others worked very hard to actually, recruit Crown to stay here in Pennsylvania. And they just, you know, they've already moved in, but they just announced last week that their international headquarters is going to be housed right here in Bucks County. So not trying to steal them from Philly, but at the end of the day, you know, it was if we didn't salvage their move to Bucks, they were going out of state. And, you know, it's 250 jobs that are well-paying jobs that we would have lost. You know, people, you know, if they moved to Florida, obviously would have been required to sell their homes, you know, if they were going to stay with the company and disrupt their lives. And, you know, it could have had, you know, an impact on our economy, both locally and at the state level. Obviously, it's a blip on the radar in the grand scheme of things on the state level. But if that happens in a dozen communities or 25 communities, the global impact of that, when you sum that up, is actually pretty substantial. So, you know, as an elected official, sometimes we get involved in stuff, and nobody really knows we're involved in it. There was a newspaper article last week about it, but, you know, it's not a big deal. It's not a glamorous thing, but it's an important role that we also play, and it's an important battle with the economy because Pennsylvania does not have a very robust business program. The governor's action team does do a good job, so I'm not disparaging them, but other states are throwing $10, $20, $30 million at these companies to relocate from our state. And you're basically playing defense to keep the jobs you have, you know, while you're also trying to expand and create jobs here. So, you know, the economic impacts and the job creation or job protection, you know, retention, is something that we also have to be involved in and be conscious of.
Right. Well, if there's no jobs, there's no money in the economy. There's no money to buy things from the other companies that are out there or businesses. And, you know, this area has a lot of small business. I know Bucks County does a tremendous amount of small business. And so the jobs are really important. The businesses are very important. But let's talk about the constituents. People are struggling, and, you know, they were struggling for some time. Either somebody was out of work or they had problems paying for their health care. I mean, I can go through a whole list. And women started this Me Too movement, which I thought was interesting because they're finally letting out the fact that they were abused or they were sexually harassed or whatever. And, you know, and it's good they now have a voice. And in Bucks County, you know, I know that our legislators are doing their best to apply themselves to the, you know, there's so much rhetoric out there of somebody not doing something or somebody's against something else. And these political parties are hashing it out amongst themselves back and forth. And you're not hearing the true facts of what is being done on the back end to protect people. So with the legislation that's out currently, has the state done anything with regard to women in the communities of Pennsylvania right now?
Yeah, there's a couple different things. Bill was just signed by Governor Wolf. It was Marguerite Quinn's bill, who is a state representative from Doylestown. She's currently leaving the state house, and she's in a race for the state senate. And what that bill does is it – well, I should say law now because it got signed into law. It tightens the loose nuts on domestic violence and PFA in terms of firearms. You know, there's still due process because I know some of the Second Amendment folks were upset about that. But when a final PFA is issued or alternatively a domestic abuser is convicted, the forfeiture component of the firearms, her bill actually tightened that up. It tightened up the time frame in which the firearms have to be turned over, and it also tightened up where the firearms have to be relinquished. It used to be you could give them to a family member. You know, and there's nothing – so if I turn my guns over to my dad, there's nothing stopping my dad from giving them back to me or me having a key to my dad's house and going there and getting my guns back myself. And, you know, it's intended to protect the victims of domestic violence, which obviously is not gender-specific, but I'm sure there's some study out there, that many studies probably, that show it's more one-sided than the other. So that bill just became law. And another bill
– yeah,
I'm not sure the governor – and another bill that – it's on the governor's desk. I'm not sure if he signed it yet or not, because there are probably 30 or 40 bills we sent to him in the last couple weeks. But it was a bill, it was a Senate version of a bill that myself, Representative Kate Harper from Montgomery County, and Representative Perry Warren from Bucks County introduced, and we did it on a bipartisan manner. And it would create the crime of endangering the welfare of a child. It creates a subsection within that existing law for those that commit domestic violence in the presence of a child. So one spouse beats the other spouse and there's two kids there, the prosecutor could actually charge the offending spouse with two counts of endangering the welfare of the children because the children witnessed this domestic violence. Either they don't have to touch the children, but just they were in the presence of it. And, you know, I think that enhancement, that those additional charges, while not deterring the domestic violence, unfortunately, but I think those charges, additional charges, will warrant an additional penalty on the abuser. And that was a bill. The Senate version was the bill that actually got to the governor's desk. But like many of my colleagues, I don't particularly have pride of authorship. If we're doing good stuff and it happens to be the Senate version of the bill and I have the House version of the bill, I am happy to shepherd the Senate version of the bill through the House to get it to the governor's desk so we can improve Pennsylvania. So there's two specific incidents of things that we have done, and they're both, you know, in the domestic violence realm, but I mean, they're protecting victims in some cases with the firearm part, hopefully saving victims' lives. And also, you know, in the children part, I mean, for children to have to witness that, that is certainly something that, you know, is horrifying to me. So, you know, yeah. Having some additional charges there is something that, you know, I think is warranted on the abuser.
Well, anything would help. And it's not always men. It's sometimes it's women. It's amazing. But moving on and talking about our children, you know, education in the Commonwealth has not always been up to par. There are areas of the Commonwealth that struggle. The children struggle. And I know I heard, you know, and look, I watch TV, you watch commercials during election time, everybody's got their points out there. And Governor Wolf said he put a lot of money into education. Are you seeing any improvements in the school systems throughout the state, or at least in your own constituency area? Because I know Bucks County has some great schools. Philadelphia is lacking big time. Montgomery County has some great schools, but there's some areas, and I can go into some of the poorer areas that, you know, we all have those, that the children are really struggling. And what is being done from the state to help them, to increase the level of education, to increase the opportunities for new teachers and for better schools and better supplies or tools?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, you know, although we provide funding to the schools, you know, we're providing, you know, whatever proportion, and it is disparaging across the different districts, like in terms of the amount of state funding that they get in terms of their total budget. You know, other than state mandates, the majority of the work and decision making is actually done at the local level. It's done by the local school boards in terms of, you know, developing the programming or the administrators, depending on what we're specifically talking about. But it's done at the local level. And, you know, we provide the funding. You know, it's almost like when you give your child the $20 bill and they're going to the mall. You know, they're probably going to buy something, but are they buying food, or are they buying clothing, or are they buying a video game? Like, whatever it may be, you know, you're providing the funding, but you don't have complete control over how they ultimately spend it, because once you give them the $20 bill and drop them off at the mall, they're gone. You know, so it's, you know, we have some controls. We don't have a ton of controls. And anytime we start talking about mandates or standardization, you know, we get a lot of pushback from the districts because they obviously want their freedoms. You know, and one of the things that makes things complicated in Pennsylvania is how diverse the state is. You know, you have your urban areas, you have your suburban areas, and you have your rural areas, and each one has a strong constituency, and sometimes they have the same needs, but many times they have varying needs, and that's where things can kind of get a little challenging in terms of managing things. I can tell you something we've done since we're talking about a lot of current events, school safety. I had a bill in the House. Senator Brown had the bill in the Senate. The Senate bill is ultimately what became law. But at the end of the day, what it was the Safe to Say line. It's modeled after Colorado's Safe to Tell. And it's not just a phone line, like a phone tip line. It's not just that. It is, in addition to that, you know, obviously there's a web reporting system, but there's also an app-based system, so which is more the younger generation, those that are in school. That's how they're programmed to work, because that's the technology they have today. But, you know, they can report, anybody can report, students, public, any suspicious incident or threats to schools. And I'm sure over time that will evolve into all public buildings because, look, places of worship have violence, workplaces have violence. But the tip line goes to the Attorney General's office who's staffing it, and then they in turn, you know, will notify the local authorities or take whatever steps are appropriate. Like I said, it's modeled after the Colorado Safe to Tell line, which has been very successful over the last many years. And they kind of, yeah. You know, why reinvent the wheel if they're already meeting with success?
No, there's a woman in Kentucky who just, I heard her on the news this morning, she thwarted an episode of someone coming into the school with guns. And she was able, became aware of it, and she stopped the person from getting there. And this is what our people need to do. They need to speak up. They can't be scared, hiding in their homes and pretending nothing is happening out there. And it's not just in the schools. It's anywhere. You can be in a mall. I mean, it's terrible that we have to be concerned about our safety today. And I know that in Bucks County, I got to tell you, the local police departments in the state, and especially in Bucks County, they're very vigilant on what they do. They're there. I've seen them. It's amazing how quickly they get out to any type of situation. And Philadelphia is like that too. I got to say, we have one of the best police forces in Philadelphia in the country. And you don't see the things that you see in some of these other cities. But crime will be crime. And the problem is out there, and with the intellectual things that we have on the web today, people have the opportunity to police their neighborhoods. And, you know, I don't want to keep going on about the safety. It's very important. I know that. But we have an opioid crisis right now. Now, drugs have been rampant for many years. But now our children are dying. And is the state putting money into perhaps helping these people? I mean, I know Philadelphia did some crazy thing where they're moving people into neighborhoods. I don't know why they're doing that. But is the state putting money or even talent into or departments into helping this problem?
Yeah, there's a significant amount of legislation that we've passed on the issue, and including funding. So we've done several different things, such as we have a prescription drug monitoring program, so the addict or dealer can't pharmacy shop and go from one pharmacy to the next pharmacy to the next pharmacy, continuing to fill the prescriptions and fueling the supply of the drugs. So that's one example, and the program seems to be working very well. You know, unfortunately, the tidal wave that is this addiction and epidemic, you know, like that tidal wave already hit. So we're kind of picking up the pieces and just kind of fighting off the residual waves that are coming in now.
Right.
So, you know, because so many people got addicted, and many of them got addicted because they had some sort of injury or they had a surgery, and, you know, they took the pills as prescribed, and the very addicting nature of those pills led them to be addicts when they never were before. So, or they weren't using the drugs for recreational purposes, you know, and then
well,
the
young
people that are addicts.
The young people went to it also because it was cheaper than buying the other drugs. And
well,
and
that's what I was going to say. Then you have the recreational folks
that
actually started using it because they wanted to get high. So we've passed several pieces of legislation controlling some of these aspects. The other component's funding, and the governor has actually implemented several centers of excellence. There's one right here in my legislative district. I was there for the opening and the first committee. You know, the first committee aspect to it. So we had that going on. We have that going on, and one of the things is, and I've been on the scene as a first responder where people have been Narcan'd. Two specific cases, you know, where the same one case, the person was Narcan'd 47 hours after we previously Narcan'd her. Her being near death or pretty much dead when we got there didn't deter her from going back out and getting high again, or overdosing again. And so, you know, I've actually been on the scene of that, and not a lot of legislators have that experience. So, you know, the disbursement of Narcan is actually putting quite a strain on the first responders as well because of the volume of overdoses, and there's a lot more call volume to go handle those calls. But one of the problems you have is you have to have a consistent model. When somebody overdoses, you have to make sure they get some counseling, and they pretty much need to be ready to be treated, because if they still want to be an addict, or the draw of the drug is too strong, other than an involuntary commitment, you're not really going to get them in the right place. So, but for those that want help, we have to make sure they have Medicaid or, you know, insurance coverage to pay for the treatment. We have to make sure there's enough beds available for those that seek treatment. You know, because if somebody wants treatment and you say, oh, you know what, come back next Monday, well, with the grip of that addiction, do you think they're coming back on Monday? And they may be dead between now and Monday. You know,
right,
so
is the state, not to interrupt you, but is the state actually putting in funds for these type of programs? Because
yes. Yeah,
you know,
and each community only has so many
dollars to deal with this.
Yeah, and I forget the exact number. For some reason, $60 million is ringing around in my head, but I hope that's the exact number, but don't hold me to it in case it's not. But there was a significant investment in this to try and address these things, and obviously some things are being done on the federal level. But, yeah, I mean, I did a lot of work on the recovery house aspect. Senator McGarrigle's bill became law. I actually amended the language in that became the final version, because one of the things that was problematic in where I live is, you know, people were opening up recovery houses in neighborhoods, you know, in Levittown neighborhoods and other neighborhoods in our community, and there's no regulation, there's no oversight. Basically, they're running a cash business. They're not keeping them necessarily clean and safe. So there's a neighborhood impact for the residents that live in that neighborhood, but there's also an impact for those people that are in recovery and are actually, you know, trying to stay sober. If these houses aren't run in a safe and clean manner and you have people still bringing drugs in, the chances of relapsing grow significantly. So,
I get that.
Yeah, it's not a single solution. It's kind of like you don't win a war without the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, the Army, you know, and all the various branches. You know, it has to be a kind of a comprehensive effort, and that's one of the things that we have going on right now. But I feel like, you know, had this effort been done, you know, 10 years ago when this thing was starting to bubble up, you know, you probably would have, you know, how many fold less addicts out there now than you do. You have that many less deaths, and you would have such a less
of a
strain on the
system. Well, I call it the underground medicine cabinet syndrome. So you wouldn't even know if they were taking them. I mean, the problem was this built over years. But you know what? We only have a few minutes left. This is a short episode, but you're listening to Pennsylvania State Rep. Frank Ferry of the 142nd House District of Pennsylvania, covering Lower Bucks County, Langhorne, Humeville, Lower Southampton Township, Pendel Borough, Langhorne Manor Borough. And you know what? And Frank, with this election coming up, and obviously you're with the GOP, there's a Democratic candidate coming against you and opposing you in this election. And you know, you hear a lot of crazy things out there. You know, there's so many nasty things in politics right now. And everybody's blaming somebody for somebody, and you're the incumbent. Talking to our audience, please tell them what you're running on. What is your agenda with the next election coming up? And I would say you have about 5 minutes to tell me this.
Sure, no worries. So I will tell you this. I was born and raised in the community. Obviously, my volunteer fire service, you know, has been almost 3 decades worth. So my community dedication is, you know, I'm serving the community I was born and raised in. If you talked to me 12 years ago before I ran for office and said, you're going to run for office, I would have thought you were crazy and probably put a straitjacket on you. But it's just the turn that my life took, and I'm very happy that it did. You know, there's roughly, depending on what all the governor has signed right now, there's roughly 22 bills that have been signed into law during my 10 years in office that are either my bill, the Senate version of my bill, or have one of my bills incorporated in them. And it is a broad range from helping our first responders, like firefighters that have cancer, to the governor signed a bill 2 days ago that expands our prescription drug program, the PACENET program for low-income seniors. And I fought for that for years, and that was my piece of legislation he signed. So that means 17,000 seniors, low-income seniors in this Commonwealth, will now have access to a low or very affordable prescription drug program they didn't have access to before. So that night
That's
I put my
awesome.
Head on the pillow, and I know that significantly changed the lives of many, many seniors. The decision to eat versus taking your drugs, or the decision to, if you're supposed to take two pills a day, but you only take one because you want to string that prescription out longer so you don't have to go and refill it. You know, those decisions will hopefully go away for those 17,000 seniors. So, you know, that's what I'm running on. I'm running on, you know, my accomplishments. I have not sent out one negative mail, or there's not, I'm not up on TV, but our online ads and all, everything has been positive. I will tell you, though, this is the harshest political environment I've encountered in all of my elections. And, you know, what I say to the people listening is, please be an informed voter. Whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, Green Party, Libertarian, whatever you may be, please be an informed voter. Please actually don't straight line vote. Take a look at the candidates, because there are good candidates on both sides. See what they stand for. And vote who is going to represent the interests the best. You know, find the person that you know is going to go out there and do the very best they can, whether it's in Washington or in Harrisburg. You know, I hear people talk about the TV ads and the negativity. And unfortunately, statistics show negativity wins the elections by making your opponent unelectable. I've not done a single negative thing during this campaign, even though I've had my sign stolen, literature's been stolen out of doors. Like, we have video of this stuff, we have pictures of this stuff. People have pled guilty to stealing signs. Like, it's just absurd what's going on right now. And law-abiding citizens feel that, because they're very upset with Donald Trump or the White House, they feel, though, that they can act out and actually break the law, which is just bizarre to me. I can't get my arms around that. But, you know,
well,
what,
man,
you see
Donald Trump is not, no, he's not in our community, okay? He's out there somewhere. The fact is that you're here taking care of your people. That's what you got to worry about, right?
Right. Well, exactly. And I think Donald Trump doesn't know Frank Ferry exists. On election day, I'm pretty sure he's not looking for the results of 147.
Unless you have a couple of billion dollars.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's not going on election night. He's not going to be looking at to say, did Frank Ferry win in the 142nd district of the PA House? I'm pretty confident that's not going to be happening. But, you know, when you see these ads on TV, you also want to see who's paying for them. Because if it doesn't have the, if it's not paid for by the candidate or for the congressional races, if they're not saying, or the U.S. Senate races, if they're not saying, I approve this message, you have no control over it. After the Supreme Court ruling that allowed all of this corporate and dark money to come in, anybody can buy these TV commercials or send out these mailers, and you don't know where the money's coming from. So to understand where the candidate is, make sure you see who paid for the ad or who paid for the mailer that's in your mailbox, because there are limited controls that a candidate has on what can go on. And, you know, if it comes from the candidate and you like it or you don't like it, you know that that's actually based. If it's paid for by, you know, People for a Better Bucks County, well, Frank Ferry doesn't control that mailer or that TV commercial. And not that that's specifically going on in my district.
I'm glad you brought that point up. It's really important that people understand there are activist groups that have their own interests, and that's why they put these commercials up. And a lot of them, I got to tell you, you don't need to be negative. You just need to prove the results or what you're going to do for your own community. And, Frank, of all the things, I love what you did when you got the hot dog legislation go through where our dogs and cats can't be left in a car that's hot. And I think, and I applaud your effort to make that happen, because you know we're dog lovers.
The governor actually signed that into law yesterday. That is officially a law in Pennsylvania now. So what it is first responders have immunity if they damage a vehicle while rescuing a dog or cat that's been left in a car and in the heat or the extreme cold. Likewise, it's a summary offense now, so the person, you know, will receive a summons for it. And it was law in 20 some other states. It's now a law in Pennsylvania. It was a lot of efforts
and
with the veterinarians.
I know we can talk a lot about it, but we have no time left. So,
all right,
anyway,
very good. Well, thank
you
so much for having me.
Yeah, if you'd like to learn more about State Representative Frank Ferry, go to frankferry.com. You'll see his website there. And your office is in Langhorne, is that correct also?
That is correct, yes. Yep.
Okay, well, thank you again for being on the Expert Channel. And best of luck in the election on November 6th. I'm sure you'll win again. You sound like you've done a great job already for 10 years. And hopefully we'll get you back on again.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the Expert Channel. Next week we have Sherry Lee Wojcik from Canada, who will be talking about Facebook and what you can do with that. Thanks again for joining us on the Expert Channel.
You've been listening to the Expert Channel, featuring new shows every week with interesting guests. For more information about the show, guests, and upcoming schedule, visit www.theexpertchannel.net.